Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the David Mead Podcast. On today's episode, we have Albert Kelly. I played a lot of footy with Albie back at the Titans before he went to England, and then I played against him over there. Now he's back at the Broncos and we've spent the year together playing back in Australia. Albie, welcome to the podcast, mate.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You spent 5 years playing in the NRL and then 6 years in the English Super League, and now you're back here with me playing at the Broncos.
Yeah, it's been a pretty, you know, colourful journey for myself. Started back in 2010, played a few years, a few injuries here and there, and you know, found my feet at the Titans alongside you, Dave, and played some pretty awesome footy, and got the opportunity to go to England and travel the world and play rugby league, you know, in different places, and which is a very big eye opener.
We'll speak a little bit about your time over in England, what you enjoyed over there in a sec. But right now you're obviously back at the Bronx. You enjoying your time back in Australia?
Yeah, very much so. It's good to be back home and seeing familiar faces, a little bit of family here and there, besides the lockdowns and the borders. But yeah, definitely miss the sunshine, the food as well. So the beach is probably one of the main things, you know. I love to swim, get out there and, yeah, enjoying it with the family.
Do you remember some of your more enjoyable moments that you had in England on and off the field?
I think mostly on the field is, you know, definitely making those Challenge Cup finals. I think my first year I made the Challenge Cup final, and we was actually in the middle eights. So, you know, we wasn't doing too well, and we ended up making the final, and we got touched up in the end. I think it was about 50-0, and you know, I was coming against a red hot Leeds team, and I think they did the treble that year, so you know, not many teams do that. And I think it was just more of the experience, you know. We got to play at Wembley. I think it was a 39-year drought for the club, so you know, it was history in the making. And you know, seeing how much, you know, whole KR fans and members, how it means to them, and, you know, haven't, you know, kids haven't seen that, you know, in their lifetime. You know, I think most of the older people have, you know, been around since the last time that happened, so.
I didn't realise how big the Challenge Cup was until I got there and seen it for myself. For those who don't really understand it too much, can you explain just how much it means to people, not just in Hull, but, you know, across the UK who follow the Super League?
Yeah, well, you know, it's pretty much the oldest rugby league trophy in the world, I think. It started years and years ago, you know, back when rugby league started. And I think all the teams, you know, in the hat, like your local A-grade, you know, similar over here, you know, they're in the early rounds, and you know, they get the opportunity to play against championship teams and Super League teams, you know, depending on how they draw. I think at one stage, you know, some smaller teams ended up beating some Super League teams back in the day. Yeah. And you know, it's a different competition, and I'm fortunate to you know, I've lost one, and I've won one back in 2017, and it's an amazing experience, and you know, the lifetime memories come with it. It's just out this world.
Yeah, certainly a great experience being part of that Challenge Cup weekend, because it's kind of like a local, I'm going to say Maris Brothers, give my old team a shout out here. It's like the Maris Brothers playing against Burley Bears, and then beating Burley Bears, and then you know, progressing on to play like one of the NRL teams, which is pretty cool. I saw that couple of years ago, maybe 2-3 years ago, where Halifax, I think it was,
yeah,
they made it to the semi-finals. I think it was one of the, Queensland Cup level teams who progressed through to a semi-final, which would have been a great result for their team. You just spoke about winning the Challenge Cup for Hull FC. Do you remember what that was like when the final whistle went, and what emotions were running through you?
Yeah, it was. It was a very nervous, probably 5-7 minutes because it was a very close game against Wigan. And, you know, Wigan's always been a top three team over there in the Super League. And it was just, it was so nervous. Like anything that you did in the game, you'd had to do it, you know, 100% and make sure that, you know, you execute your skill because, you know, they can definitely turn the game around and, you know, take it from under you. And, yeah, I think we was up by 8 points or so and, you know, they had their last shift on us and made a break up the sideline and it was eventually got called back for a forward pass and everyone was cheering and, you know, we had to burn a set and, you know, that bell, it ended up going, but we've made a break. So I think it was Fatuli Talanoa who made a break and, you know, everyone was all celebrating, but I was, you know, supporting him. You know, we probably could have scored another try at the end, but he ended up getting tackled and, you know, we just celebrated, ran to the fans and it was amazing. I think it was about 80 odd or plus thousand fans there at the at Wembley, and it was crazy. You know, after taking the photo, a champagne in the eye. I think one of the boys got hit in the eye with the cork, and some of the memories is will last forever. Yeah.
Certainly would have been a great experience. Do you remember any of the tougher moments that you experienced in England?
Probably just before I moved home, when coronavirus came around, and you know, I think I was coming off contract, and you know, the uncertainty and of my career, and you know, what was next? That was the main question. So. I was in negotiation with a couple of clubs over there and I just really didn't know what was going to happen. You know, I was getting, you know, scared. I was, you know, thinking, you know, I had thoughts in my head, you know, this could be it. I could be finished to the game. You know, I knew that I had a lot left and, you know, with the coronavirus and uncertainty of the game and, you know, lockdowns and everything, we just didn't know what was going on. And, you know, I just knew at in the back of my mind, for me to get back to my best, I had to go home. So,
yeah,
you know, that was a pretty clear picture on what I wanted to do. And, you know, being over there for 6 years and, you know, got to travel around the world and see things where, you know, you only see on movies. You know, coming from a small country town, you know, didn't think, you know, for the world that I'd be in those positions, but to be over there 6 years and see those things, and you know, I knew it was time to come home and take my kids home.
Yeah, so the uncertainty about you know, playing, being able to play again, whether in the NRL or Super League, is something that worried me as well last year, because obviously we weren't playing many football games, and I think the comp got started back up in August, but leading up to that, you're kind of just sitting there going, oh man, what's it going to be like for me next year? What else am I going to do besides, if rugby league doesn't work out? You know, I know we all don't plan to play rugby league forever, but we want to play as long as we can. So it certainly would have been a tough moment for you. How did you handle that? Because it wouldn't be an easy situation to be in.
Oh, it was, you know, it was pretty tough. You know, at home trying to homeschool the kids and at the same time, you know, try and keep in good nick, and it was so tough. And you know, you'd have, you know, negative and positive thoughts running through your mind, and you know, I've got to train, I can't let it go, and come night time I'll be eating a bowl of popcorn and an ice cream. So you know, it's so tough. It's you got to be, I was, you know, up and down that whole time in lockdown, and you know, training, and you know, overeating, and you know, going back and forwards, and you got to have that thought in your head, like, you know, I'm going to get this, I'm going to get that, you know, I got to do this to be where I got to be. Always, you know, trying to stay fit to, you know, for anything that can happen. And, you know, that's what my mentality was.
So just doing things that you can control.
Yeah.
Especially the way you're thinking.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, training and stuff. Obviously, it's a stressful time, so it is very hard to deal with, not just for us rugby league players, for, you know, anyone out there who is losing their jobs and stuff like that as well. So I appreciate you sharing that, Albie. Where were you born and where did you grow up?
I was born in Maxwell, small town near the Nambucca Valley on the mid-north coast. And I was born there, and yeah, I ended up growing up with me and my brother and our grandparents. So we moved from Maxwell, and then we went pretty much just over the mountain to Kempsey. And you know, me and my little brother grew up with our dad's parents in Kempsey. And it was all right. It was tough times, but you know, we was back to back for a while, and you know, we just enjoyed each other's company as brothers do, and you know, a lot of fighting here and there, and but you know, we've got a pretty, you know, close bond.
Yeah. Do you remember what a typical day looked like, say before school started even?
Yeah.
Do you remember a typical day like that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'd get up early. You know, I'm more of a morning person, and you know, I'd definitely get up, cook some porridge and put some toast on, and you know, I definitely enjoyed that bit of the morning. And you know, once that smell hit the room, everyone would be up looking for some. So yeah, no, have my breakfast, put on my school uniform, and you know, get ready for school pretty much. And you know, once I'm all done with all my jobs, I'd sit down and watch a little bit of, you know, was it Cheese TV back then?
Yeah, that's so, right. Well, yeah. That's a long time ago now.
Oh, that's a very long time.
You look like a Nutri-Grain type of person, not a porridge.
I'd mix it up. I'd mix it up. So
so you lived with your grandparents. They obviously, you know, worked pretty hard to look after you. I grew up with a single mum. We had a big family in a house, you know, four bedrooms, a family living in each. But I spent a lot of time with my grandparents growing up, and I saw how hard they worked, you know, planting vegetables and carrying them, you know, when they were ready to be harvested, carrying them back to the village, doing all the weeding and stuff in between as well. So I learned a lot of, like, the, you know, the hard work brings you rewards.
Yep.
From them. Did you pick up much of that from living with your grandparents?
Yeah, well, you know, we definitely had to do our jobs. And you know, my grandfather, he was a truck driver, and you know, he used to work, you know, tirelessly to, you know, for us to have our best, you know, opportunities. You know, either it was at sport, you know, during school. So, you know, he put us into a St. Paul's College in Kempsey, you know, Catholic school, and you know, all of our, you know, most of our teammates in our rugby league team, you know, would go to the public school. So, you know, it was hard because most of our mates was at another school, and but you know, everything was for the best of us, and you know, we made a lot more friends there. And you know, it's the hard work that they did, you know, made us the men that we are today. And you know, even when we went home, and you know, we had to do our chores, take out the bins, put the compost in the, you know, veggie garden and stuff like that, and mow the lawn. You know, we had a pretty big lawn, so we'd be there all day. And you know, you'd have to put up the fence around the veggie garden because, you know, the kangaroos would come up and eat the compost. And it was all their hard work my grandparents did for us. And especially with making the teams, you know, sporting teams, and you know, they'd have to fork out all this money for us to go to, like, rugby league carnivals, swimming carnivals, and athletics and stuff like that. And you know, it was hard for them, but yeah, for them to see us succeed, you know, it was good. I remember a story that, you know, me and my brother, no one didn't want to do the relay, so it was just me and my brother, and all the other teams had four legs, and we only had two, so we ended up winning it. So
you ran 200 meters each.
200 meters each, and we ended up beating every team, so it was good.
Mate, you do have some endurance. Hey, what are we talking about, these 1.2Ks at training for?
Oh,
not, mate, being able to make the times.
That was a good 15 years ago.
Now, yeah, your grandparents, you know, sound like great role models, and they, you know, certainly looked after you. And obviously, you show your gratitude with the hard work that you're putting in sport, in your professional career, and the family you have. So I'm sure they're very proud of you. Which tribe are you from? I know you say you're from Maxville, but what's the tribe there?
That's the Gumbangi tribe. So, I think it starts from Grafton and comes all the way down to the border of Dungari tribe. And that's my other tribe, where my dad's from. That's where I grew up, in Kempsey area. It goes all the way down to Walker, at the back of Port Macquarie and stuff like that. And it's a pretty big, you know, country, Gumbangi country. You know, there's several towns in there, same as Dungari, you know, several towns in that. You know, it's some very beautiful spots, you know, very beautiful beaches, you know, South West Rocks, Crescent Head, Main Beach, Nambucca, you know, very rich in life.
What do you think you've learnt from the tribe, and, you know, what values do you think they're big on and sharing with you guys?
I went to a school in on the mission of Nambucca, so it was called Bellwood Preschool, and we had indigenous, you know, all my aunties were pretty much all the teachers and that, you know, a little bit of song and dance and stuff like that, and learn a bit of, you know, bush tucker, stuff like that, a little bit of language here and there, and, you know, it just, as you would say, you know, our culture has been, you know, cut short a little bit, you know, in that education department stuff, like not learning in schools and stuff like that. But, mm-hmm. you know, these days, you know, we've got books, we've got teachers teaching in schools of our language, and which is good to see. And, you know, back then, you know, our sacred sites were, you know, at the top, you know, we had to protect those. And it's pretty sad to see some of our most sacred sites have been destroyed lately, and, you know, that's you know, it's heartbreaking. And, you know, our culture is strong, and, you know, we as a culture and people, we need to respect the past and the present.
Yeah. And do you think there's much being done about preserving these sacred sites now, and, you know, making sure that, you know, the culture still continues to grow? Because me personally, I've learned a little bit over the years through the NRL about your culture, but is there much more being done outside of the game to make sure these are?
Yeah, well, it's hard to say. You know, it's you know, you got these big time developers coming in, you know, to these nice beach towns, you know, trying to chop down stuff, put, you know, big high rises and, you know, houses and stuff like that. And, you know, I know in South West Rocks, the Fig Tree people there, they cleared this land, and, you know, that's a former burial ground, and the people, you know, want to protect that. You know, that's history for us, and, you know, that's a sacred place. And there could be more done outside, you know, more recognition more support around, you know, those rallies and protests, you know, against, you know, those big time contractors and stuff like that. And, you know, I think people in like my position, you know, like other players around there, you know, it could be happening in their community as well. And
yep.
For us players, we need to stand up and, you know, throw all our support behind that.
Yep. So we need to bring more awareness and more support.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because it's very important. I know this is the land that, you know, helps us live our lives. So we need to make sure that we respect it, as you said.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about your position as a halfback, 5'8". Have you always been a halfback, or did you play any other positions?
Before I moved to the city, I was more of a centre lock. So I was tall and skinny. You know, you wouldn't believe it now, but but yeah, I was a centre lock, and I asked her what position I was going to play when I moved to Parramatta, and they said I was a little bit too small. So I was like, okay, show me my teammates. And, you know, I walked through the door and, you know, they looked like men. They were so big, and the big Polynesian boys. And I was like, yeah, I think I might have to go in halves. So, yeah, no, it was a pretty quick transition for me. And, you know, I just loved playing the game, and, you know, anywhere on the team, you know, I just wanted to get out there and, you know, play.
Is there anything you did, do you remember, in those early days to help you gain the skill as a halfback? Because it's not a easy position just to be told that, yeah, you're going to play halfback instead of centre lock.
You know, before I even moved to the city, you know, my grandparents, they had a lot of grandkids, and, you know, I think I'm like midway in between the grandsons, and, you know, I've learnt most of all my skill from my older cousins and my uncles and that. So, you know, they pretty much imprinted on me straight away, you know, growing up, and, you know, I've learnt all my skills, you know, from them, and, you know, I thank them for it. You know, some of them could have kicked on and, you know, made it to the NRL, and unfortunately that didn't happen. But, you know, for them to, you know, teach me some of their skills and imprint on me, you know, I thank you very much for it. And yeah, I think that's where I got all my skill from.
Yeah, so a lot of your family helped you gain those skills. Because I was going to talk to you about, like, young Indigenous kids who play any sport for that matter, how they look so skillful, you know, especially when they have the ball in hand, or, you know, AFL. When you see, you know, like highlights videos and stuff like that, you're like, man, these kids are just like a naturally skillful. Do you think it's something to do with that playing with your cousins a lot, or?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Just spending the time, you know, doing it, because, you know, I grew up in a small country town, and, you know, if we didn't have a football, we'd fill a 1.25 Coke bottle up with water to halfway, and, you know, we used to play on a netball court with a Coke bottle, and, you know, full on tackle, and, you know, on the cement. So, you know, we used to, you know, just keep driving, you know, on playing, because, you know, we didn't have much to do in the country. And, the football, you know, that was our best friend, you know, even in any other sport, you know, the time that you put it in, you know, the awards will definitely come.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, the time that you put in.
Yeah. So I say they look, you guys look naturally talented, but that's probably taking away the hard work aspect of it, you know, because, you know, as you said, putting the time is probably the part that helps you develop those skills and, you know, making you look like you're naturally skilled. I want to talk a little bit more about the halfback skills. Just a bit more specifically for any of the young kids playing halves, or if there's a center or a lock out there who's thinking they want to change to a halfback. Now, I wish I played halfback now that, you know, I've played over 10 years at the high level. they get paid a lot more. So that's why I wish I was a halfback.
Definitely. Like, you definitely get a lot more wax.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you'll definitely get a lot more sore after a few games if you play in the halves.
Yeah. So let's just say you've got the ball in hand, right? You're running into the line. Is there anything that you're looking for that makes your decision easier? Or which guy to pass the ball to?
Well, first of all, I have to do my build up to, create that opportunity for, my players outside me. I'll be looking on taking the tempo to the line. So, going hard at the line and, trying to make them come out of the line at me or not come out of line. That's where my players, have to excel in that opportunity where hitting a inside line or hitting that next hole outside me where, I created by taking the tempo to the line. So
yep. So you run fast into the line, so it creates a little bit of space for your guys, guys outside you.
Yeah.
Okay. If there's a couple of young kids out there who want to, practice this drill, what would you be telling them? Say you got like a 12, 14-year-old wanting to get good at this. Yep. What would your advice be to them?
Possibly, to set up some cones and in like a agility drill where you can take it to the line, and stop on a dime with a nice skillful pass, where whether it's short, long, or even a grubber.
Yep.
You always got to have your options open to anything, and that's what makes halfbacks so key to a team's success. Yeah, Cooper Cronk, Jonathan Thurston, all have that skill. Andrew Johns as well.
So I said 12 to 14, but it's for any age really that this applies to, because we do our extras after training and stuff like that. You realize that doing your extra training is what makes you, what gives you confidence to go out and perform each week. Have you been big on doing extras throughout your teenage years growing up and up until now?
Yeah, I love, just being there for, the boys that are doing extras. I'll have my own extras where, I'll, focus on my kicks, focus on my passing. And then I've got my team extras where, we're running plays just to so we all stay on the same page and, get it down pat come game day. And and then there's parts where, like, I might be, too sore to do my extras, so I'll go and help, others with their extras, like hold the pads, run decoy lines, stuff like that, dummy half passing.
Stuff that's not too physically taxing.
Yeah.
You can get your recovery.
If I'm too sore to do mine, I'll be doing, someone else a favor by, helping them. And it also is helping me as well because, you're creating that bond with your teammate.
Yeah. What's your mental prep like throughout the week? I know we talk about physical preparation and doing your extras and stuff like that. Is there a mental preparation that you consciously have throughout the week and then going into the game? Is there like self-talk, visualizing? Do you do any of that?
I do a lot of self-talk, probably a day out from the game or on the game, game day. And I think, if I'm, laying at home, watching TV, I might, drift off and you thinking of the game, but my self-talk, going into the game, I'm like, it's all about the goals, like on the team sheet, on, what I need to do to get this win or, put us in the best opportunity to take the 2 points, it's simple things like, I'm not going to get beat on my inside shoulder today. Yeah, if someone's running at me, I'm going to, get under their ribs. I'm going to wrestle. When I'm at the back of the sweep, I've got to straighten up. Just simple things like that where, it's all relative to how I'm going to play.
Yeah.
and which keeps me, you know, in good mindset, you know, going into the game as well.
Yeah. Do you have any, you know, how we arrive 90 minutes before kickoff? Do you have any like rituals or things that you do, or that you need to do before kickoff, or you like to do?
So when I get in there, I unpack my bag, take out my slippers, unfold my towel, you know, put all my warm up kit, roller, stretch band, and then I'll get into my warm up kit straight away, and I'll put my headphones back in, and I normally listen to, you know, country music for about till the last 5 minutes, and then maybe I'll chuck on some hip hop, like a Tupac, or
just to pick the
tempo up, just so I can get a little bit of, you know, fluency going into the warm up. So
yeah.
You know, I don't really want to listen to country music going in straight into warm up. So, you know, I'll play like one or two songs of hip hop, and it'll just get the blood flowing, eh?
Yeah, so, kind of puts you in the zone type of thing. Yeah, because I found that too. I like to listen to like pretty, I wouldn't say relaxing music, but just a bit more laid back music until like two or three songs to go, and then I'll up it to like Eminem or
ooh,
50 Cent or something like that. Just because it makes you feel like you're getting ready for gym or getting ready for
the house.
Oh, yeah. Give us a rap if you want.
Oh,
right?
No.
Yeah, so it's usually like a relaxing until a couple of minutes before warm up.
Yeah.
I'll put a few upbeat songs on and then get into the warm up. Just before you, when you get into the warm up, what do you? Is there any final thoughts before you get into it, or do you? What do you normally say to yourself or to your teammates?
You know, I try to bring a lot of energy, a lot of buzz. You know, trying to inject that confidence into my fellow teammates, and you know, it makes me feel good that I'm doing it, and you know, it probably it's the right thing to do, you know. You might see one of your teammates, you know, still a bit flat down, you know, and then for me to, you know, give that, you know, energy, confidence in them, you know, the belief, you know, might pick them up, you know, might go out and have a cracker, you know, I've done my job, I've got to do this, you know, I've got to do my own job. But then once you do your own job, you can help others, you know.
Yep.
That's, you know, that's what I'm about, you know, anything to get the win for the team.
Yep. So that's your approach,
yeah.
Going into the warm up. I know we've just talked about, you know, upbeat stuff, playing games and stuff. Just a little something that we've all had to deal with at some point in our life. You had a fair few of these, and let's talk a little bit about injuries. Won't focus too much on them because I don't like talking about them, but I do like talking about how athletes deal with it and how they get over it and get past it. How have you dealt with some of the injuries that you've had, and you know, some of the setbacks?
Yeah, I've had a fair few injuries over the years, and your mindset after you do the injury is very crucial on how you look at the injury, and how are you going to cope with the, you know, the duration of your injury, and then your rehab on top of that, and you know, that's all done and won by your mindset. And you know, I've had some lengthy injuries, and it's really tough because you're going back and forwards, you know, fighting negative and positive thoughts on your injury, and you got to set some goals. You got a, you know, timeline of your injury, and you know where you want to be at this point of your injury, and if you're kicking those goals, you know, you could be back a lot earlier than, you know, what you're thinking. And I think with my latest one, my hamstring, you know, it's been good. You know, I've kicked all those goals. I had a hiccup halfway through one of my hamstrings. I've redone it, and you know, it could have broke me, but I was like, nah, I want to get back and play. I've got so much more to give, and you know, it was so hard to come back the second time than the first one. Because, you know, like, oh, no, maybe I should give up. Maybe I should just take it slow this time. But, you know, I was so eager to get back out there on the field. I kept doing my hard work, ice recovery, like all that kind of stuff, stretching. You know, I did it to a T, and, you know, that was the best thing about it. You know, I knew all the hard work that I did got to, you know, get me back out in the field.
Albie, as we get closer towards the end of the podcast, there are a few rapid-fire questions, a few fun questions just about yourself.
Yeah.
I know you said you – I'm going to take a guess at this. You know, what music do you like listening to? I'm going to guess it's country.
Country music, yeah. It is.
What about what music do you like dancing to? Because I see you dancing a lot in the locker room and in the gym.
I like classic rock. Classic rock and a little bit of hip-hop, R&B. Classic rock just lets, you know, my body flow. If you know what I'm saying, you know.
I know what you're saying, mate. I see it every day. Do you have a game day meal?
Not really. The night before I do. So I love having spaghetti bowl.
What's your favorite holiday spot in Europe?
In Europe, Italy is. I've been there twice, and it's just amazing. I want to go back.
Great spot. Your favorite current rugby league player?
That's a pretty tough one, eh? Favorite. Can't go past the cheese at the minute.
Yeah,
I like that. He's a gun. I like that kid, man.
He's a gun footy player and very entertaining off the field.
Yeah, definitely. I love him. Yeah, the cheese.
Do you have a spirit animal? Or if you were an animal, what would you be?
Well, I've got some totems culturally. You know, Gumbangi and Dangari. I've got Dangari Prime Menace. The diamond python as well. I think just the way I play, I play like a bear, I reckon. So I like the bear.
A bear?
Yeah.
So. All right. We'll roll with that one. I like
we'll go
that.
With the bear.
Yeah. Your favourite moment playing footy?
Probably my debut. Just knowing how hard I worked to get to there. And, yeah, to have, you know, my family there in the stands supporting me. You know, we might have lost that game, but, you know, that would just meant the most to me, yeah.
What's your favourite moment outside of footy?
I'd have to say, you know, the birth of my kids. Yeah, that'll be pretty much it, yeah. So, birth of my kids.
Yeah, certainly. Do you have a quote that you like? I know you say a few off the top of your head at training all the time. I don't know if you're making them up or you get it from somewhere else.
I got a fair few, so.
Is there one that in particular that you like?
There's so many that, you know.
It's hard. It's kind of hard. When I ask this question, it's hard to bring it to the front of your mind.
Yeah.
So if you don't have one, it's all good.
Probably the one I've been saying the most, you know, during warm-ups and that is probably run hard, tackle harder. So it's more relevant, you know, to the game.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know back in the day, Nate Miles and Steve Michaels, I used to, you know, come up with one called make sure that you carb up for a carb up.
I was going to say one of your ones that's led up to this moment, look good, feel good, play good. So whenever I think of that, I think of you.
Oh, mate, I've got them all.
So, Albie, very last question. With everything that you've experienced and learned so far, what advice would you give to a 13-year-old Albert Kelly?
Oh, okay. I could, you know, probably give him a lot, but I know I'd tell him, the more recovery you do as a young person, the more years you might get in the back end of your career. So I look at the players like Mark Minicello, you know, Luke Douglas, the ultimate professionals, and you know, how they looked after their body over the years, and they've, you know, played at the top level for, you know, nearly two decades, and every game they put everything into it, and, you know, yeah, just look after your body when you're young, and you know, hopefully it'll give you some rewards when you're older.
That's an awesome way to wrap up this podcast, Albie. I appreciate your time today. I appreciate the stories you've told and the insights, and some of your quotes at the back end certainly give me a lot of joy at training. So I appreciate your time today. Thanks, Albie.
Thanks, baby.
If you've enjoyed this episode, then I'd love if you would hit that subscribe button, leave a comment or a review, and share it with anyone you think might enjoy it as well. For more behind the scenes content, head to my Instagram at davidmead411 and feel free to slide into my DMs if there's anyone you would love to hear from. I can't wait to bring you another episode next week, and thanks for listening to the David Mead Podcast.